Hello and welcome to another podcast from A View from the Bullens with me, Mick Kemp, Lee McLean, Carl McKenna, Ben Winstanley, and our very special guest today, former Everton player, Michael Ball. Michael, thanks for joining us.
No, you're welcome, lads. Nice to be here.
No, thank you. Just touching on this Sunday's game that was postponed against Aston Villa. Lee, I know you had a lot to say about it on Twitter. It's really split opinions, this one. What were your thoughts on the game being postponed?
I'm just a bit confused, Mick. I think along with everyone else, there just seems to be different rules and flying around every time you read an article or whatever. I know they're saying there's different rules for the FA Cup and different rules for the league, but I just think that my thoughts now have turned to potentially what that means for Everton further down the line this season with fixture congestion and stuff. And I just hope, obviously, you've seen what it's done to us and other teams in terms of injuries and things, that it doesn't come back to bite us on the bum a little bit. Obviously, first and foremost, it's just rubbish not to have a game this weekend and not able to capitalise on that great performance against Wolves. But it's, you know, on the plus side of things, I suppose, Mick, it's given us a chance to get these players who are coming back from injuries, you know, a little bit more time to get fit and, you know, firing again. You think Richarlison straight away, James, Luca Dean. It's a chance for all these to come back and get fit. But, mate, who knows? I don't know what these decisions mean anymore. My head's gone with it all.
Carl, it means we've got 10 days off before the Sheffield Wednesday game on Sunday. Do you think that is something that Carlo would have welcomed?
I'm not too sure about that, to be honest, Mick. That's a great question you're asking me. Yeah, I think either rather have kept the momentum going, wouldn't he? I imagine so. What a great victory that was against Wolves. So I imagine he would have been a little bit frustrated again in the fact that, you know, players were up for it and could have moved into the game on today. And would have been a tough game, you know, Villa the tough side, again, physical fit. You know, I feel like he'll be a bit upset about that and probably wouldn't say it, obviously, but he might be thinking, yeah, okay, I'll take that and obviously try and get Alan back and possibly Gabamans. Looks like he could be back in the frame soon and a DCL. So, Gabamans is his name. Yeah, obviously, not seeing much of him, but read an article today saying that he's nearly close to fitness, so fingers crossed he'll come back. So, yeah, I mean, I think Carl will be split about it, to be honest, Mick. I think he'd be thinking a bit gutted, bit of momentum lost, but obviously getting some players back fit.
Ben, I personally think it was a bit of a blessing. Obviously, with no Decore, now he's suspended, no Alan. I do think going to Aston Villa without our first two choice centre midfielders would have been a bit of a big ask. Do you think it will be a bit of a blessing having the day off and it means Alan will be back with Decore out for the next game?
But you look at some of the positives, obviously the players get more rest. And as Lee and Carl both touched on there, we've got certain players coming back. Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Alan, who have been two massive players for Everton Football Club this year in terms of in the midfield and obviously scoring the goals for Everton. But like Lee said, I don't really know what the guideline is regarding the Premier League. We all read articles that under no circumstances a game's going to be getting called off throughout the season due to the COVID-19 pandemic. So I don't really understand how the game's been cancelled not once but twice on us this year against Man City too. So negatively, we're going to have to squeeze all these games in down the line, and is that going to affect us, or are we going to lose momentum, what Carl said before? And for me, it would have been a great time to play them. Obviously, if we end up losing players and we have to play games, we're going to be weakened, and Aston Villa, we're definitely going to be weakened today. So I feel like we might have lost out on 3 points here today. We could have played a lot weak inside and could have gone at them, used a bit more squad rotation in our team. And I think a big negative out of this is that Abdoulaye Doucouré now misses the Leicester game in a few weeks. Now he's been a man mountain in midfield for me and an absolute key workhorse going forward and in defence. So is he going to be a massive miss? So we're going to have to play the likes of Tom Davis and Gomez in the midfield again. And we've seen against Rotherham that they're not as mobile as the likes of Doucouré and Allen. So it's, you've got to put positives and negatives. It's great to get re-energised and more rest and get players back, but again, it stops the roll and we might not be up to match fitness. And I don't know how it is in training, if they play as they do in matches. So you've got to see both sides of the story, Mick.
Bully, in fairness to Aston Villa, I think today is the first time they're actually allowed back in the training ground to play at Bodymore Heath to train. It's a bit unfair on them, isn't it, to expect them to play a game with no training for 10 days?
Yeah, of course it is. I think all you guys have just covered all the pros and cons, really, there. Yeah, I feel going into that game, Villa won't have many days to sort of get themselves ready. So it was the 3 points we probably could have got. But, you know, without DCL probably playing every minute so far, needed the rest. So I think that it is what it is. I think the situation is a little bit better getting called off 3 or 4 games ahead. I thought the Man City one was a bad decision. Very too late. Carlo would have been working with the players, trying to get recovery sessions in and working on his tactics. And, you know, a few hours before the game, it's postponed. At least this time, you know, Carlo can be able to put good sessions in. He'll be able to get across what he wants from the players and work on more stuff in at Finch Farm. You're given the 3 or 4 days notice. In the future, yeah, we're going to have a backlog of games. But funny enough, when we've been under pressure, I played last season and this year, where we played big teams sort of back-to-back and not much rest, we've actually performed pretty well. Fingers crossed that hopefully that carries on. And we haven't got an excuse. We can't be going into them games going, well, we haven't had a break. We've been playing since, you know, the start of the season. We've had a little break now. Time to, recover. The lads who have got little niggles, the lads who are out injured, a chance for them to recharge their batteries as well. But the guys who are fit, and the lads, they're mostly the lads who have been sort of on the sideline, a bit of a squad player. A chance for Carlo to focus on them and, you know, push them a bit more in training, get their fitness levels up, because they're not being sort of match sharpness. So they can work harder at Finch Farm. So when Carlo calls upon them, you know, they're going to be fit and ready to show them what we're all about. So, yeah, I agree. There's pros and cons with both. And, you know, a weekend without a football game, watching the Blues, it is, you know, you don't know what to do with yourself, do you? You know, so it's, on a selfish note, I'm gutted it's being called off.
Also at Goodison Park this week, chaps, was the AGM, a really important AGM as always. Carl, I know you took a real big interest in this AGM and I know you watched it. Was there anything in there that really surprised you or stuck out?
No, Mick, to be honest. It was pretty much same old, really, with them AGM meetings. Pretty much what I expected. You know, the questions they asked for, they already had answers for, which is fine, you know what I mean? But one thing I was a little bit concerned about was Farhad never attended the AGM meeting, yeah? Now, obviously, when he first came into the club 4 years ago, he had a vision. And he said, we don't have all the time in the world. That was the words he said. And he said the vision was to establish ourselves to be in the elite. Now, looking at the AGM meeting we had most recently, we haven't really progressed in them 4 years. So we've obviously hemorrhaged a lot of money through Farhad, and he's obviously been the main backing of that, which we're all grateful for. But I think over the last 4 years, we've just come to the conclusion now that we probably got it wrong in that sense. So with him not being involved in the AGM meeting, I now feel as though he got it wrong. He's made their mistakes, rectified them. And now with the appointment of Ancelotti, which Ben touched on saying, best signing we've ever done in 30, 40 years, I can honestly see the future AGM meetings being a lot more positive with a lot more guidance of where the club's going. Obviously, Bramley Moore is going to be massive. That was touched on a little bit in there. I think one of the highlights of it was the fact that he mentioned James Rodriguez was a free. I mean, how we got that deal across the line, I will never know, but that's got to be up there, one of the best deals in world football. I'm telling you now, he's absolutely quality him. So, I mean, yeah, the AGM meetings are a bit of something again, same old, Mick. I mean, a few of the lads that we're on here with now probably listen to it too. They probably can stand next to me and say the same. You know, we have to see progression in these. And I think now after 4 years, the mistakes have been made and moving forward, I think we've got something to go after. And with Carlo at the helm, I think there's a bright future for us, definitely.
Lee, Marcel Brands was there. He was pretty much the host. He did say towards the end, it's been an absolute honour to work for this beautiful football club for the past 2.5 years. And I really hope and wish to see you all back at Goodison Park as soon as possible. His contract ends this summer. Was that maybe a parting goodbye, do you think?
I'd be surprised, Mick, if it was. It might just be one of those comments that you perhaps read too much into, and it can mean a couple of different things, can't it? But he's touching on Carl's point there. I think we've stumbled across Carlo Ancelotti. You know, Mashiri's plan, obviously, I don't think he wanted it to take this long, and obviously we've had to endure the Koeman and the Silver eras where we've admittedly got things massively wrong.
Okay, me too.
Recruitment-wise, it was shocking. It seemed like we were just going in with a scattergun approach with no plan. I think the absence of Mashiri the other night, you could look at it in a positive light to say, okay, I'm comfortable with who I've got in place now in terms of Ancelotti and Brands. Obviously, on the pitch, things are going particularly well at the minute and there's cause for optimism. I'm just going to take a step back and allow other people to speak. So no, I wouldn't tend to read too much into that, Mick. I think he's onto a good thing at Everton. His last few signings, you know, if you look at them especially, I'm going to pinpoint Ben Godfrey as being the latest one that we're all buzzing about. You know, he's getting more things right than he's getting wrong now. So maybe we've just had to learn along the way. I'd be disappointed if he left. I think he's a top man. He's a smooth operator, isn't he? Definitely in the running to be the next James Bond as well. If you but no, I wouldn't read too much into that, Mick, if I'm honest.
No, Bowley, we did touch on it on the last podcast, but I really feel the need to ask you. In this AGM, it was spoken about the transfer window, and Brands has come out and said, you know, we're not looking to do much business, if any, but we will keep our finger on the pulse. Do you think it's a missed opportunity not making some moves this transfer window, given how tight the league is this year?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, in the summer, when we brought the players in that we did, and I always thought Everton January is always very quiet, and they don't really like to get involved in trying to bring players in. And we've always failed because we haven't been in a position to push. The season's basically all been over, been out of the cup. So it's been understandable that we haven't brought any players in the January window. But this time around, you know, we're up there challenging for Europe and hopefully pushing for top four. So I feel we've got to kick on. You don't want to stand still. I understand the financial fair play is really above our heads right now, and it's a massive balancing act. But you know, Carlo Ancelotti, we brought him to the club to back him, and you know, I think he'll be wanting to bring players in to lift the levels up in training and obviously in his starting 11 to be successful. That's what he needs, and he wants players ready now. Marcel is different. He's got to balance it all from players now, players for the future, and find, you know, players who's going to be sort of with us for the next 2 or 3 years. Carlo will want to be successful yesterday, so he's got to keep the manager happy. And if there's deals out there to be done, I'm sure we might be there or there around, but I don't think we'll be pushing the boat out. You know, we've got to be really blessed, really, with what Carlo has sort of done so far. You know, he's inherited a squad that probably was a bit disjointed. Some players weren't really that happy, probably playing, weren't on form. Carlo's brought his own guys in, but many games this season, a lot of the players that he's brought in have been out injured or suspended, and he's had to get the best out of the others. So while that's fantastic, it's also sort of worked against him. I think of the board could have thinking, well, he's got the best out of Iwobi now. He's getting the best out of Tom Davies at times. He's getting the best out of other players in and around him. Michael Keane's, you know, he's been on fire since lockdown.
Yeah,
you know, the other players in the squad who were probably average and below average have raised the game under Carlo. So that could stop us bringing players in when we keep on getting successful results. The board be going, well, what's the problem? But we know as fans that, you know, expectations, you know, since Mashiri's coming has totally changed. And yeah, we made massive mistakes. And, you know, I was worried when it happened. We've never had money before. And all of a sudden we've got, you know, a pot of gold and we went out and wasted it, really. You know, it's all different scenarios. There's too many cooks. I think there was obviously Steve Walsh was there. He wanted to have his input. But obviously the manager wanted his input. Mashiri probably wanted his input. So I feel now it's sort of calmed down a little bit, and they've probably realised the mistakes, and You just got to listen to Carlo. You know, you've got to back the manager. You know,
what he's
brought in, they have raised the bar. It's only you can question Carlo when he brings players in and they don't do anything. You know, if they brought Rodriguez in and he was a waste of space, then we'd be questioning it, going, you know, why did we back him? You know, but right now the guys he's brought in have took us to another level, and you can see the quality in these players, and we need to sort of challenge that in all positions as possible. And you know, that does cost money, but you know, Marcel and Carlo, you know, I don't think Marcel would have got Rodriguez. You know. You know, I don't think that's his remit. I think he's more of like players under 26, 27 or so. That's Carlo brought him in, and it's credit to Mascheri and Marcel to get that deal done. So that's fantastic. And if we can find another one, you're great, because we don't want to be standing still. We know I think Carlo knows we can improve. You know, he's showing frustrations on the sideline, which is good to see, because he means, okay, we're getting the results, but he's not happy at certain instances in the game that, you know, he wants the players to be more sort of forward thinking and don't take the easy option. And that's just with quality and, you know, having that confidence to do that. So fingers crossed that if there's a deal to be done in January, we bring him in, and it gives everybody a lift, doesn't it? Every time you know, as a player, seeing new faces come in, it raises your game as well personally, but also gives the fans a bit of a buzz and refreshes everything. So if it's to be done, I think we've got to go out there to show that we're doing everything we can to push for the top six, top four.
Definitely.
Ben, after the AGM, strong rumours came out. I don't want to go too much into transfer rumours, but Joshua Zirkzee at Bayern Munich, that came out very quickly with a loan with a view to a permanent. Again, just like what Bawley just said, he does fit the remit of Marcel Brands. I believe he's 20, a really good age. He's made a few caps for Netherlands under 21s. And he's made a few senior appearances for Bayern Munich. Is he an option that you think he might go down?
Yeah, just looking at some of his stats, he's a big boy for his age as well. Like you said, he's 6'4", played 12 times for Bayern Munich, scoring 4 goals in the process. And reading online, that they seen him as a long-term successor to Lewandowski, Bayern Munich. That's why they got him in. And it fits the remit for Marcel Brands. You look at some of the figures that come out from that AGM, that they inherited a squad of 40 players worth roughly £311 million. And today's date, he's now got 27 players, roughly worth about £456 million. So the average player there is worth £16.9 million. So that stat alone was a massive improvement. And you'd like to see with this Joshua Zirkzee, you can get that deal over the line for like a long-term future star. He had trials with Everton about 4 years ago, and I think Bayern Munich came in the fold last minute. And I think what he said at the time during an interview was he would have loved to sign for Everton Football Club. He loved the feel around the club, but you just couldn't turn Bayern Munich down, which a young lad like that, you can't really blame him, to be fair. But touching back on the AGM and Marcel Brands, £60 million spent for Decore, Allen, James and Godfrey is somewhat of a sublime window for Everton Football Club last year. And I think Marcel Brands sometimes gets a bit of stick for some Evertonians, but I think he's done a really, really good job in the 2.5 years he's been there. And I hope to God that he signs a contract and stays, obviously being a member of the board still at Everton Football Club. So, and another thing, looking at the stadium, I think we're just waiting for the green light, aren't we, from the council to come January and February now. That'll push us on to get a bit of positivity behind, because it seems to be delayed because of, I don't know if it's to do with the pandemic. And I think Liverpool Waters and Liverpool Heritage and the World Water Site are fighting back, aren't they, from certain aspects of the stadium. So I hope that can get going. They'll get their green light for that, start building for that. And the future really looks good around Everton Football Club. And it's like Bawley said there, Ancelotti will want to push on now, I think. He's got the players there now that he's developing. Tom Davis mentioned, and a few others who have come on leaps and bounds under him. So the AGM as a whole for me was positive. And if the likes of Cenk Tosun does leave, I think Josh Reserve should be a perfect replacement in getting some minutes off the bench, give Calvert-Lewin a bit of a rest, and hopefully push on. He can bang a few goals in, and we can watch him live, hopefully, at Goodison in the coming weeks. Fingers crossed.
Bawley, yeah. Moving on to yourself, you live the dream of pretty much every Evertonian. 121 appearances, 8 goals over 1996 and 2001. You made your debut against Spurs, Bawley, as a substitute. What was it like starting out within the first team in 1996? You know, you had the likes of Andrei Kanchauskas, Joe Royal, Dave Watson. What was it like? What was the feeling when you come on at Spurs?
Yeah, it was obviously a dream come true. But it was... You know, finishing school and then going straight into the YTS at Everton. It's just being in around the players that you cheer from the stands, or probably give them some stick from the Gladys team as well at the time. And then next minute you're sort of your teammates, your work colleagues all of a sudden. And I would just look around. I was pretty quiet in the changing room and just sort of, you know, like a sponge really, looking at everybody, seeing how they looked after each other and how they worked, how they developed. And, you know, and after only a few weeks or so, Jimmy Gabriel was the reserve team manager, and he got me involved with the reserve team, which was pretty small, probably only about 7 or 8 players. And it was a mixture of youth, a mixture of the guys who were on the fringe of the first team or players come back from injured. So I was always sort of training with, you know, Anders Lindpar and Vinnie Sandways and Granty. And, you know, the level that they could train at was unbelievable. You know, it was so difficult, and it was just great to be around them all. And so that upped my game, because I wanted to prove myself. So I wanted to make, as I said, I was pretty quiet in the changing room. But when you're out in the training field, you've got to sort of put yourself about a little bit. I was probably a bit too heavy-handed at times at me tackles. But I didn't want anyone to sort of take the mickey out of me. And I wanted to show I want to be in and around this environment, you know, each and every day. And it probably, you know, raised a few eyebrows. And, you know, the manager pulled me, it was Joe Royal, got me involved in a game before the first team on a Friday normally play like a little sort of walk through 11v11 to go through tactics and stuff. And he called me in to play left back against Andre. And I was thinking, oh no, here we go. but then I didn't really understand the sessions. I was going for 100%, and you know, Andre couldn't get past me. I was kicking him probably a little bit too hard, and Joe Royal just stopped the session, said, "Michael, could you just let him get past you so we can carry on to the next session?" And I was like, "Oh right, sorry, I didn't know it was like a shadow play." So you know, Joe Royal, I think he just loved my attitude of it all, my hunger to sort of being around it, and then I started traveling with the first team. You know, getting bullied around, getting told to make the cup of tea. I haven't made a cup of tea in my life, so they weren't the best cup of teas on the coach. But it's just being in and around the environments, how they look after themselves, you know, going on the coach away trips. And the reason behind that was so I wasn't sort of starstruck. You know, I ended up getting used to being mates with them all. They weren't my sort of heroes anymore. They were just basically my teammates. So I wasn't overawed when I got given the opportunity. And unfortunately, Joe ended up leaving. And so I thought my opportunity, it was gone. You know, I thought, that's it, I'm going to have to start again. A new manager would come in, and then I'll have to prove myself all over again to being in and around the first team. But, you know, Dave Watson was, he was the skipper. And luckily enough, he kept me involved with it all. And he gave me opportunity. There was an injury just before half-time. I was on the bench. And when you've been on the bench, you feel like you're going to come on for some reason. And then when it actually happened with the Tottenham game, it probably dragged on that long. I'm thinking, I'm not going to get on today. You know, it's a very important game. It's a, you know, it was a massive game for us at that moment in the season. So I didn't really feel anything was going to happen. But with the injury that happened just before half time, Waggy gave me the nod to get changed. And that was it. Me sort of realization of I'm going to about to come on, run on at Gunnersford Park and making my debut was sort of like, gives you a bit of a shiver. And then that's it. Your game mode. All I can remember from that game was that I think we had a goal kick. The ball went over my head. It went out and the referee blew for half-time. So I had 10, 15 minutes at half-time to sort of get my head round, focus what I needed to do. Waggy come over and just said, look, Paulie, you know what the fans are all about. You know, if you've got an opportunity, put a good tackle in and they'll be behind you. They'll support you all the way. And, you know, I've never been booked. And then I think after about 5 minutes, I thought I could out-muscle Vega or Varga.
Yeah, Ramon Vega,
Yeah, so I went through the back of him. Just like enthusiasm, just trying to stop a throw-in or something. That's all it was. I got booked. I thought, oh, no, I'm going to get sent off in my debut here. So it was great. I mean, obviously, it was a big result. We won 1-0. And just a proud moment for myself afterwards. You know, you make your debut, put that blue shirt on, you're good to support, and you get 3 points, you know. Besides scoring the winner, you can't get much better.
What was Dave Watson like as a captain? Obviously, you know, people think really highly of him. Was he a really, really good leader?
Yeah, no, he was brilliant. He was getting to the age, but he's game management and his understanding of where to be. And we had a good set of lads. I think we had different different leaders for different things. Big Dunk was great with the young lads. You know, they had Shorty, Dave Watson, and I was always defending with, always working with the defenders, so I got to know them pretty well. And they'll have, good times, they'll have banter when needed to be, but they were very professional. They were hard working. Like Dave Watson would be out one of the first in the morning. He'd be going for like a 1-2 mile run just before training to warm himself up. I don't know if it's because of his age or what. That's how long it took him to warm up. But I was thinking, you know, if I'd done that, I'd be knackered before the session, you know. So but he just wanted to play and he wanted to be involved. So he knew because of his age that he had to work harder than everybody else. Even though he was the captain, he had to work harder and be more professional. So we're looking at him and thinking, well, that's what you need to be. To hit the levels and the standards he had in his career, that's what you need to do.
Moving on, the return of Howard Kendall, Bowley. What a feeling that must have been, you know, Howard Kendall walking through the door.
Yeah, well, Howard was the reason I signed when, as a schoolboy. When you get to that sort of magic age of 14, clubs really want to tie you down, the schoolboy forms. And, you know, there was a lot of clubs looking for me, but the only one I was waiting for was Everton, and it never seemed to be coming. And then I got the phone call off, my father said he got the phone call off Ray Hall to say Howard wants to meet you in a local restaurant with my family to speak to me. So I was over the moon, and it was Two Tops in Formby, and it was quite a posh place, and you got to wear a suit, and I didn't have a suit to my name. You know, I borrowed a friend of the family's suit, about 3 sizes too big for me, and it's just been like, for him to even ask us for his time, you know, that was great. And we sat down with my parents, and we said a few little things, and then he just goes, well, do you want to play for Everton Football Club? I said, oh yeah, of course I do. And he goes, great. And then he told me to leave. So I wasn't there that long. I had to sit at the other side of the restaurant, just not doing nothing. Really, there was no phones back then to entertain me. And my mum, my dad, Howard, and Ray, they sorted out the terms to make my dream come true. So that was, wow. You know, my mum and dad remember that occasion. So when Howard came back, it was obviously fantastic. But then in me back of my mind, I'm thinking, does he remember me? Doesn't remember me. I mean, he'd done a few pre-season games, and he spoke to the team as a squad, as a whole, not individually. So I was thinking, I don't know if he remembers he actually signed me. And then all of a sudden, the famous Belfield steps, I was, you know, banging my boots and taking my boots off, and Howard just sat down, and he was doing the same. And he goes, Bowley, I remember that night we signed you. And so that meant a lot to me. And I thought, well, you know, if he did, you know, he probably did. But then it was just the way he went about it. It sort of, you know, gave me that sort of proud moment that he does remember it. And, you know, you just want to play for them. And that's what Howard brought for it, I think, a lot. He knew how to manage a lot of players, and everyone who sort of played under him, he wanted to do the utmost for them.
Yeah, you played under so many good managers and big names. Was Howard Kendall, you know, the one that where you really sat back and just thought, wow, I'm playing under Howard Kendall?
But yeah, as a Blue, that was, you'd always wanted to do that. You know, you watched Howard be successful as a fan, as a young kid, and, you know, and all the players speak about him, all the stories everyone said about him, but to be in and around it and witness it, you know, it was, you know, it's fantastic. You can't really explain it. You know, afterwards, you know, I think I moved on and Howard moved on, and we bumped into each other in the village, and you're just having a coffee, having a drink, and you just, you know, you wouldn't do that with any managers. You know, I think a lot of players who was in and around Howard, he was like a friend to them, you know, and also he was your boss, and, you know, whatever he said went, you know, that there was no messing about with him. But, you know, off the field, he had a lot of time for everybody, and, you know, he was just a great person to be around.
Moving on, and I know this is Lee's probably is one of the worst days of his life, especially pre-match. The pre-match build up to the Coventry game at home, you know, it finished 1-1. Lee, I know you had numerous heart attacks, mate, beforehand.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask Bowley, mate. You know, I recall that day. I think I was 14, and nerves. I mean, the word nerves doesn't even come close to covering it. You know, before that game. You know, I remember going with my mate and his dad, and I don't think we spoke in the car on the way to the game. And usually we were all excited and talking and that. I mean, God knows how that must have felt as a player. You know, with the weight of expectation, the size of our club, especially coming only sort of 3 or 4 years after that Wimbledon game where we all thought, you know, hopefully that'll never happen again. I was just wondering, Bawley, what was that like? You know, what was the, you know, what did you do to sort of prepare for that game, and was it hard to play your own game?
I was very naive. I watched that game numerous times since I've retired, and I'm more nervous watching it than I was at that time. I think I had that sort of blinkers on that, well, it's Everton Football Club. I queued up at 10:30 in the morning to get into the Wimbledon game at the Gladys Street, and being in around all that situation, and, you know, we got the result that we needed. And the Coventry game, the memories of that was before the game, the day before, we went to stay in a hotel, and that we've never done that before. You know, normally a home game, you just turn up at Goodison. And again, that could be a bit of a masterstroke. You know, it happens all the time now, most games. But back then, I think Howard just wanted to get the team together, you know, eat the right foods, have a good sleep, and get away from the homes. You can sort of focus and relax yourself before, you know, a big game. And I was in that mindset of, well, it's Everton. I know it's daft, but, you know, I was like, well, it's Everton. We're not going to go down. You know, there's no problem. We're going to win. And I had that sort of mentality that we're going to win nearly every game. Very naive of me. But that's just the way I was. And as soon as, it's probably the feeling of, not nerves, but excitement, really, of going to Goodison, of turning up on the coach and the streets were packed. You know, the fans were all out there. They were climbing up lampposts and, you know, cheering us all on. And it was like, yes, you know, game time now. Come on, let's go and do it. That was, but I was very young, you know, so I didn't have, you know, I wasn't aware of the sort of ramifications if it all went wrong. And I didn't even put that in my mind. You know, maybe the older players were probably feeling that. And, you know, when you look at the game, it wasn't the best game at all. Yeah. You know, there was, you know, a lot of players were sort of taking a very easy option out, and because he didn't want to be the one to make the mistake that would cost the club. And I can understand it, but the way I went about, I was just naive and didn't really think about it. I just thought it's impossible, it won't happen. And the big one of the biggest incidents of that game, I got, you know, a bad kick on my knee by the family enclosure, and there was a hole in my knee, and there was blood everywhere. And the physio, Andy Jones at the time, said, like, that you're coming off. And I had a big argument with him. I was like, I'm not coming off. I've got to stay on this pitch. And that was the realisation of, I need to help my teammates. I want to be involved. I don't want to let the club go down. I'm sitting in the changing rooms or on the bench. So, you know, he slapped me, basically. He probably gave me a good little right hook to my face. and I was like, because I think the panic set into myself, and he could probably see that. And then I was off the pitch, and I was walking down a tunnel, and Howard looked at me. And he said, what are you doing, lad? And I said, well, he's telling me I've got to come off. He said, do you want to play? I went, yeah. And he goes, get back on the pitch. So I turned around and ran back on. And luckily enough, you know, it was a scary moment when Dublin scored. But, you know, luckily enough, the result went forward, and we got what we needed to stay up. And the dressing room wasn't a celebration dressing room. It was more of a relief. But I was in the doctor's room getting thrown up by my throat, by the doctors and the physios, going, I could have cost the club because, you know, I've lost half a yard because of the hole in my knee, and I, you know, walked off with bags of pills and crutches. But then you're thinking, what's just happened? And it was only the following day I went to Belfield to get more treatment to see the doctor, and Howard was sitting there, was just like a, you know, he just looked like a really proud man. And I spoke to Don Hutchison about the situation, and when we're all in the changing room, and I was in the doctor's office, Howard just locked himself in the room himself, and, you know, he broke down, and just the relief that he saved our football club.
Wow, what a man.
What a guy, yeah.
It's incredible. I mean, before the game, obviously, you know, you've got some really experienced players in the dressing room with you, Bawley, the likes of Craig Shaw, you know, Watson and Hutchinson and the big Dunk. Was there a big rally cry before the game, or was it all just, did you treat it like a normal game and the lads just went out there and just thought, you know, let's just get the job done?
I'm not sure. You know, again, because I was so young, I think I was probably just more focused on myself, being that sort of, that mindset. As long as I just worry about my first pass, I worry about my first tackle and make sure to just get myself into the game. That's all I used to focus on before games. I think as soon as I get me fit, I was being taught and coached that, you know, when the game starts, get yourself you know, ready, don't start too slow. So I wanted to concentrate on my first touch, my first pass, and then that settles you then to get yourself into the game. And that's all I used to worry about, and my opposition, who am I up against, what's he, What's he good at? Is he fast? Is he left-footed, right-footed? And I'll just focus on myself. And as a youngster, that's what I probably didn't have the capacity to sort of worry about everybody else was up to. So I think, you know, between obviously the senior pros, they obviously know how to get themselves up for themselves, but also what to say to the personnel around them. But at the top of my head, I've got no sort of memory of if anyone else was sort of under pressure. But as I said before, if you look at that game, there was a lot. You can see there was a lot, lot of players that looked like the pressure that got to them.
Yeah. Moving on, Howard Kendall departed and Walter Smith came in. You know, we were a struggling club. We had boardroom unrest and we had financial problems. The controversial sale of Duncan Ferguson, that then happened, obviously, and we'd already lost Gary Speed to Newcastle. How was the dressing room after the big Dunk sale? You know, how did it sit? Obviously, it was a very controversial sale, and what was it like in the dressing room to lose such a key player?
It was very strange. Obviously, Gary Speed left, that was a bit of a shock. At the time, Belfield was. It was all separated in small different dressing rooms. So you had sort of the younger ones and some first team and the senior ones and another. So it was quite a bit of a mix. So when Gary left, it was sort of disappointed. But then we sort of said to each other, come on, let's prove, you know, that we can cope without him. Let's step up to the plate. Because he was one of our better players. He was our captain and he was very, very... very good footballer, so we needed to know we've lost a good talent there, so we need to step up to the plate. The Duncan day was, you know, there was quite a few moments on that day that I always remember. It was just before I walked into the first team dressing room. Dunk was the captain, and he normally gives out the tickets to everybody, and you normally your phone's ringing with your mates or your dad going, can you get us any tickets? And you're thinking, oh, I hope I get me 4 tickets today for my friends and family.
I remember them days.
And then Duncan does give me the wad, the whole lot of the tickets. And I was thinking, right, what's that? And he goes, give them out to the lads for us. So I just thought he had to do press or he had to do something else and he wouldn't have time to do it. But selfishly, I was thinking, oh, mate, if I can text my mate and say I've got a few more tickets here. So I was, you know, going round, and the Fodmers never really had much family or friends over. So I'm going like, well, you're not having your 4. You can have, how many do you need? 1, 2. So I was doing me little me Derek Trotter moment for about half an hour, giving all the tickets out. And made up, my dad's made up. Everyone, all my friends and family got the tickets that they needed. And then we obviously the game, the way the game went, and we got a penalty, and I think I was big odds. So everyone on my side were all pretty pleased that day, because I was 25-1 or something, and we won 1-0. And after the game, I didn't hear about it till I got in the car. I didn't know nothing about it. And I was at Goodison, I got in the car, and it was all on Radio Merseyside or Radio City, and I didn't really believe it. I was thinking, no, it can't be, because I've seen Dunk. And then the realisation of what he's done, I'm thinking, no, that could be true. You know, your phone's ringing, your friends are asking you, and going, I don't know, I've heard it on the radio, just as you. And the following day, he's gone. Again, massive shock. And you just all kinds of rumours were getting flying about. And, you know, you're focusing on what you need to do. You've won a game, you're supposed to be high and supposed to be happy. I've scored a goal and, you know, we've won the game, and you feel... It wasn't a good atmosphere for a couple of days, because it felt like the club was totally split. There was the players on one side, didn't know what really was happening. It sounded like the manager at the time didn't know what was happening. We had the board. So it was like really disjointed, and it was just a strange sort of atmosphere to be around with. And obviously with, you know, Big Dunk, you know the presence he's got, you know, when he's missing, you miss him. And it was one that it took me a while to sort of probably get over. How did that happen? You know, and, you know, what was the reason behind it? Because I think Dunk was one of them, the leaders when Gary Speed left, to say, come on, you know, lads, we need to sort of rally round. You know, he's chose to move on now, so we need to sort of stick and fight. And, you know, it's, so in my head, I was thinking, well, it's gone behind Duncan's back here as well. And but yeah, there was plenty of questions at the time that, you know, no one really knew the answers to. So unfortunately, you know, we know what happens. But as the players ourselves, we just sort of have to worry about ourselves and get ourselves ready for the next game. There's not much we can do about it. It's gone.
No. Ben, what was the feeling amongst the fans, obviously, when this was happening? Duncan Ferguson sold, Gary Speed's already left. Obviously, with the likes of Bawley, they kind of have some idea of what's going on in the dressing room. It was a really tough time for us, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a bit of a shock as a fan. Because you look at like Big Doug, who's like a bit of an icon for myself growing up. I used to look up to him. And I think like Bawley just touched on then, it was all a bit sudden. It just kind of happened overnight. And it took at least a few weeks for this to actually sink in, especially with myself, that we've lost such a big icon. And I'm guessing Bawley was a massive influence in the dressing room and quite a big ego there and looking after the young lads. So I've heard, but it was just a really, really strange time to be an Everton fan at that time. I wouldn't blame anyone for leaving. There's a lot of financial issues going on, a lot behind the scenes. So as a fan, Mick, it was hard. It was a tough time growing up, and I'm sure everyone in here will echo that. And
Mick, it floored me. It
wasn't good time.
I remember obviously the game. Remember the game, Bawley getting the winner there. But I remember the next day in school, mate, I was in food tech, right? And there was only me and then one other lad called Andy Burton, and he was one of the hard lads in our year, so to speak. There was only two lads, big, massive Evertonian like us. And I remember a girl came in with a special edition Pink Echo, like a Duncan Ferguson tribute, right? And I started crying. And like, so did he, right? And the pair of us are sat there in food tech with tears running down, and the teacher comes over going, "Are you two lads all right?" And we were like, yeah, we're just shopping onions, miss. And we had to get, we took 5 minutes to gather our thoughts and compose. It floored me that, like, as a Blue, like, idolising Duncan Ferguson the way I'm sure we all do.
Yeah.
That was so hard watching him leave. And just seeing him, like, pull that Newcastle shirt on and that. I don't think Duncan wanted to, though, did he? I think it came across that. I don't think it was his first choice. I don't think he wanted to leave in particular. And he came back as soon as he could. But that was a hard time to be a Blue. Just that he had Bawley touched upon there. Just very turbulent.
Bawley, did Ferguson ever speak to the group? Did he send a text message? Or was that it? Was he just gone and you moved on?
Yeah, no, that was it. You just move on. And, you know, as you just said there, it was very strange. Like, even going up, when we play Newcastle next, and I think Duncan done very, you know, I don't think he could get his head round playing against Everton. I remember him just as I was playing, I looked over to the Newcastle bench and he was sitting there, he was fully clothed, he wasn't kitted, so he wasn't involved in the squad. But I just think he's hard just to playing against the club. You know, football, it happens, players move on, but as you said, I don't think Duncan really wanted to go, but. You know, it happens, and you can tell when he put that Newcastle shirt on that he would have gone out and done well for Newcastle as much as he could. But you know, I think the first couple of times when he played against the Blues, you know, he wasn't involved, and I just think mentally he probably couldn't play and scored against the mighty Blues.
Hey, Bawley, you know when you was at Everton and Ferguson left, did you wear his kit? Because your kit was absolutely massive on you.
One size fits all. That'd be tight on me now, though.
Soon after Bawley, your career came to an end at Everton, unfortunately. You know, failed takeover bids. The financial worries continued. And yourself and Franny Jeffers, you know, you were both sold to Rangers and Arsenal to balance the books, so to speak. How did that big move come to Rangers? Because at the time, it was a massive move. You know, Rangers were a big hitter in Britain at that time. And how were your emotions about leaving? Did you just think, you know, it's time for me to go? Things aren't happening at Everton. And obviously with other key players leaving previous summers, was it an easy decision?
Oh, no, it killed me. It was a decision that took, away from me, really. You know, I had a good relationship with Walter at the start, and it slightly soured near the end. But then the final year, the final season, I wasn't really getting game time. And then through injury, I had to play centre-half. And, you know, Walter said, you know, will you be okay? And I said, yeah, I'll be fine. And, you know, with the guys next to me, Davey Weir and Richard Goff, you know, the way they helped me as well, I probably had my best football at the club. I ended up winning player of the year. And I remember going I don't know. I can't remember where it was. The player of the year award at the time. But, you know, Alex Young presented me with the trophy, my dad's favourite player, gave him a hug, said thank you. And I just said to everyone, you know, I was in contract talks anyway as it was happening. And I just said, see you next year. And I sort of looked at Ken Wright and looked at the board as I said it. You know, just let's make it happen. You know, let's just you know, settle everything down. And unfortunately, Walter had different ideas. At the time, I couldn't really understand why. You know, I did have a knee injury that I was sort of suffering with. But as I said before, if I was playing, I was playing well. I probably have the best football in my career, putting good performances in. And I just got the number three shirt back. You know, I started at 25. I got the number three. Then Walter brought in Pistone. Gary Nace with it, brought in David Unsworth. Yeah. I'm thinking, how many left-backs do you want to keep on bringing in? I put my head down. I thought, well, you can't cry about it. You know, put performances in. I got number 12. Who the hell wants number 12? But I didn't really care. I got my opportunities to play, but I just said, well, I'm gonna get my number three shirt back, and I did. Started sort of pre-season, got the number three, and unfortunately, Walter's told my agent that I won't be getting any game time, and if he doesn't leave, he's going to be rotting in the reserves, which was really hard to take. One, because normally Walter would pull me in the office and he'd speak to me. That was out of the question. I was training by myself pre-season, just running around Belfield, not part of the squad. The lads were all talking to me and finding out what was going on, and I didn't know. All I knew was the crew from the other side had put offers in for me. And I think Everton were playing on that. They knew I wouldn't go across the park. And they were waiting for other offers. Steve McLaren phoned. He was at Middlesbrough. Wanted me to go up and look at the training ground that they just built. And I, you know, like respectfully said, don't, you know, thanks, but I'm not leaving. You know, and I don't really care what your training ground looks like, to be honest. You know, it's just, but thanks for the interest. And that was really it. But like, days and weeks, sort of week, 10 days sort of went by. Howard Wilkerson phoned me up. He was in charge of, like, the England FA, and asked me what some current situation is. And people just started throwing a concern. I was thinking, what's the problem? I said, I've done this before. I'll get myself back into the team. I'll prove Walter wrong and everything will be fine. And then all of a sudden, my agent, who was Trevor Stephen, phoned me and just said, look, Rangers want you to come up and to speak to them. And I said, well, you know, I'm not leaving. He said, well, just come up for the weekend. So I came. Trevor lives up there. We stayed in the hotel. Went to see David Murray. I didn't know too much about David Murray. He told me the history about himself. And he basically showed me what I was probably lacking at the club. You know, Everton were bringing in other players and showing them sort of, you know, and I'm not an affectionist person. As long as you're playing, I'm happy. You know, that's it. But, you know, Rangers were saying all the right things, the Champions League, the players that they had in the squad improved. They said, look, you know, come here, you know, play for the year, and, you know, move back down, or hopefully Rangers Celtic might be in the Premier League one time. And I was like, right, okay. And I wasn't really interested. I thought, well, it's not going to happen. And I got on the phone to my father and I said, look, it looks like I'm, you know, Rangers, Everton, look like they've agreed a fee. And, you know, my dad wasn't too happy about it. And I was like, well, what do I do? Went back to the Belfield and spoke to the amount of our squad, were all Scottish. You know, it was John Collins, Celtic. He explained, you know, he had to say Alex Clarend, Dunk, Gazza, Jimmy Firebelly. There was all players in the round who, you know, just... All he said was good things about Rangers, and I was just thinking, well, Howard Wilkinson said I need to. My game has gone very defensively, the way it started. He said, so if you play with, you know, good football and team, it'll play football properly, you can start sort of moving up the pitch and start expressing yourself in other areas, and it'll help you get into the World Cup. It's happening in 2002, and so everything was sort of, like, saying all the right things that you would, like a salesman. But I still wasn't interested. I still didn't think it's actually going to happen. And in a strange way, I tried to play Everton a little bit, and I said, you know, oh, I'm going to be signing. But then my knee injury, Rangers were really concerned with my knee. The medical records from the club never came through, so Rangers had to do their own medical, which lasted, you know, a couple of weeks up there. And it was just... Then I just knew that the club, Everton, wanted me out. They were trying the best to force me out. I was thinking, why would I want to go back to a place that they don't want me? Before that, I missed a point. Sorry, I was away in the summer with my family and friends, and we were in contract talks, and I got told to turn up on the Wednesday to go to Goodison to sign the contract. All agreed. We all went out. I was in Spain, so I took all my friends and family out for the congratulated meal that, I've signed my deal. And when I turned up at Goodison on the Wednesday, the secretary at the time said, well, we've just had the message that the board have changed your mind. So that was sickening. So then with the Rangers situation, they were just saying all the right things. They were showing me affection, showing me what they wanted me to do. The manager was very successful and had his sort of thoughts of what he wanted to do in Europe and Champions League and domestically. And I thought, right, okay, let's give it a crack. Let's get back playing football. That's what I want to do. And they're giving me the opportunity and an opportunity to go and play football. And that's what I've always wanted to do. And if it's going to be here, it's going to be here. So that was it. I remember Preno phoning me up when I left Belfield for the last time. And I was just in tears to him. I said, I couldn't speak to him. And it still probably hurts now, to be honest. But yeah, it's sort of, I was still young. I was 20, 21. So it was sort of, yeah, well, that's it. That career's chapter's over. And you're just thinking, hopefully one day you can go back.
You played for Rangers, obviously, PSV Eindhoven, Man City and Leicester. Bawley, you played in some terrific derbies. Everton, Liverpool, obviously, the Manchester derby and the Glasgow derby. Just a quick one. How did they differ, those three derbies? And is there a derby that you would say was more intense than the other?
They're all the same. I'm going to be biased and say Merseyside, because it means more to me personally, being a local lad. And but I've played in Merseyside derbies that have been terrible games, and I've played in Old Firm games that have been terrible games. But then the Manchester derbies, at the time, we were always the underdog. First time we'd done the double over Man United, I think it was 2008, for the first time for over 50 odd years. So that was a great occasion. But I think we'll agree that when there was something at stake, the Celtic and Rangers derbies were something else. It just brought that little nastiness, a little extra. We know there's the religion up there, but probably the best game I've witnessed was the game I wasn't involved in, because I was out in India, was a League Cup final where Rangers scored like an injury time to win 3-2. But the way that game went, one team scoring, the crowd getting up, the other crowd getting behind them, and it was just sort of back and forth game, that the game was sort of exciting to watch. The fans were all in full voice making huge noises, and yeah, it's the brilliant games, them big massive games and derbies, they're right up my street. I love them all. I had a bad record, to be honest, when I was up at Rangers, but did well near the end. I had a good record for Everton as a young kid going all the way through, and I think the 3-2 was my first derby defeat. So winning derbies is the best feeling ever, but getting beat, no matter where you are, it's sickening,
Bawley, on that point, mate, in terms of that, obviously you played in the last one we won at Anfield in 99 there. Our record since is embarrassing, to be honest, against that team. Why do you think that is? Can you put your finger on why our record against them is so bad? And do you reckon it's going to change under Ancelotti?
I haven't got a clue why. I used to read the programmes, not just about Everton Liverpool games, but some programmes you'd open up and it'll show you sort of stats of your form against this team, i.e. say Nottingham Forest, and we haven't beat Forest away for so many. I'm going, well, that's a totally different side, totally different manager. So it shouldn't matter. But unfortunately for us, since 99, it's embarrassing, and it shocks me. I speak to people, and they're kids, 18, 19, they haven't seen us win at Anfield. That's really shocking. We've had our opportunities, and we've had a bit of misfortune at times as well, but that happens in football games. So fingers crossed. We've got Carlo here, and we've got obviously better players, so hopefully that voodoo is over sooner rather than later. And because the more it goes on, the more it seems like the pressure that sort of hangs over the club, even though it's new players coming and going. But Yeah, hopefully let's get rid of that, because it's not a good start at all.
No, because it's even started to spill over into the Goodison format in derbies as well. And I mean, you can understand Anfield's a difficult place to go, but I mean, in your era, Paul, you know, just before that, the 90s, when, you know, we didn't have the best of sides, you know, every season, but we always seemed to have a good record against them. We could always raise our game, and they hated coming to Goodison. We've lost that now.
Yeah,
as well.
I can remember Houllier and was talking that they tried to treat us as a normal game, and they tried to big up different games, and the mindset of them. We just knew that if we make it tough and physical and disrupt them, they wouldn't know how to play a plan B. You know, they haven't got that plan B in them. We sort of get rough and ready and focus on our sort of, you know, our big strikers, Kevin Campbell and Dunk, and make it difficult for them. And we could get something out of the game. I think the pressure got to them. I think the pressure was on them at that time, because they were obviously the better players, and they had to sort of implement the game. We were sort of, a no-lose situation, but, you know, if we got beat, people would go, well, they should get beat because of the better side. But we made sure it was going to be really difficult for them to do that. Since then, you know, I think Liverpool tried to play their own game and knew that Everton would be forcing the issue. Everton are desperate to try and get rid of this voodoo, and they need to beat your arch rivals, because we haven't had sort of trophies and cups to sort of worry about. And that's our biggest game of the season, unfortunately, because we haven't been in and around the Champions League and cups. So the pressure's been on us, and Liverpool have probably played on that and thought, let's just play our own game, and the pressure will get to them and they'll force the issue, and that's where they find the gaps and they hate us, because we've played against them so many times that we've done well in certain situations, and then just lack of concentration and silly mistakes has cost us. And, you know, that's when you're chasing games, it's always difficult.
Paulie, just on that note about the cups and stuff like that, we've had a debate ourselves off here and on here. What would you rather have yourself, pal? Would you rather have Champions League or some silverware?
Silverware. I speak to a lot of people about this, and I just remember, say, even Mourinho when he first come to Chelsea, you pick up that programme and you look, there's silverware there. You know, it's on you. No one really remembers finishing fourth or finishing third. It's yet great season, but you haven't achieved anything. You play football. Well, you know, I do play football to try to win things. It's great financially for the club and exposure worldwide. But when you win stuff, the mentality of the club actually changed, because you've actually won something. You know, Mourinho went into Chelsea. I think his first cup he won was the League Cup. Man City, the first manager when he came in, the first thing they won was the League Cup. Man City haven't won anything for, you know, 30, 40 years. Their mentality totally changed, because they've said they're going to do it. They've done it. And then when you've done that, you've got that belief in the whole club that now we can become winners. And let's repeat this. And then if you're winning trophies, you're the good side. So then you're going to be, next step will be, you know, Champions League, and then trying to get to, you know, maybe the FA Cup. And then you're sort of in and around an environment of winners, of, you know, we can do it. We can say it. You can be naive and say, we can do this, we can do that. But when you've actually physically done it, it's stamped, it's in history that, look, we won a trophy here. Let's go ahead and try and win that. We'll win a couple of more the following season. So I think it's a trophy for me.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, lads, thank you ever so much for joining us today. That's all we got time for, unfortunately. Paulie, you've been terrific. Thank you. Thank you ever so much. Guys, listeners, thanks for tuning in, and you'll be able to hear us again on Thursday for the build-up to the FA Cup game against Sheffield Wednesday at home. Guys, thanks again. Take care and all the best.
Look after yourselves. Bye, lads.
See you, lads.